Good evening, everyone. It's July 12th, 2021. I'd like to welcome you all to our regular city council meeting tonight. If you'd all please rise for a short private invocation, asking for God's blessing upon this city and also for wisdom for our city council as we make our decisions tonight. Now, if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So tonight, I notice there's a lot of people here. On our agenda, item 1A is the citizen input section. So if any of you would like to address the city council when I get to the citizen input, that's the time, unless you're here to talk about other issues that are on the agenda. So the citizen input time allows you to talk about anything that isn't on the agenda. So with that, I'm going to move to item 1D, which is roll call. And all council members are present, save for John Erickson, and he has to be excused. He wanted to take a vacation. So, I entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to excuse John.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, now I'll move to citizen input. It's one at a time. You need to come to the microphone. We'll start with Charles Garcia. State your name and address for the record, and you have up to 5 minutes. Charles?
Hopefully you don't take that long. Charles Garcia, 1045 East Rainier, lifelong citizen, sadly 50 years as of yesterday. I just want to briefly speak about a topic that's been really a sore subject in our community, and that's the disconnection between our city and our parks and our community youth and the usage of those parks ever since we've kind of renovated it, so to say. When the grant was applied for, I believe it was a community group effort, and that community consists of whether it was our youth baseball, whether it was club baseball, which I believe they did write something in support of that grant also, and I'm just referring to the Bombers on this situation. And it's become noticeably a sore thumb in the community as far as you see our parks, but they're not being used. They're not being used consistently because there's this phobia or black cloud that says, oh, you can't use them. Or you have to do this. Or you have to jump through a hoop. Or you have to ask for permission. Sadly, I mean, it saddens me more than anybody because I'm looking at this council. And second, before I get too far, thank you for your service, because I know what it's like to sit there and be unappreciated. So thank you for that. But how many members on this council use those same fields? Angel, I think you were a Tiger?
I was a Tiger.
Yes, sir. Cowboy?
I played, I don't remember what it was. But
yeah. Mayor, the mayor was the coach of the Indians? You know, and so on and so on. So at that point, what were we without those fields as youth in this community? We were lost. I remember walking to town to play on those fields. And it's a tough for me to watch, because had I not had those to play with my sons and so on and so on, where did it start and where will it end? And so, you know, I come to you and I plead with you guys in a way to say, let's work a little more together with this. Let's not make it an issue in the community. Let's not throw stones behind one another's back as far as why we can't use it, when we can use it. Let's be proactive. Heck, let's sell the hell out of it. Those things aren't making money, and I don't understand why. You know, let's take a step back as a community, encourage organizations to come in. Give them a break. Give them a tier to work up to get to the pricing that you want. Let them bring teams in. Let them play. Generate revenue for this community. That's how you do it. You got to get them here for them to spend money. I mean, I've said it a million times. What's our best asset in this community? It's that park. That park is our best asset. And if we don't utilize it and we don't build it together, then we're sitting here in a meeting. And I was almost appalled that I didn't have to come in. I wanted to come in. Because those parks should be filled every day. Kids should be out there playing home run derby. Dad should be sitting on a bucket playing catch. So what I'm trying to say is we need to work harder. For the council people that aren't as involved in the park and rec section of it, go to your mayor. He is. You know, I rarely say this. He's a good guy. He listens. And as far as the mayor, I urge you to be more aggressive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.
Next.
Charles told me not to come up here, but I'm going to come up here anyways. My name is Robert Panetta. I live on 1420 East Fern. Long life citizen of Othello. What makes me upset, council, is having to watch these young boys play at the girls' softball field. We have a coach here. A boy went to the ER 2 days ago because he hit a rock and it went and hit his face. Why aren't they using our brand new ball fields here that are impeccable? And I drive by those fields all the time and I call Sean every single time. Why are they closed? You have a sign that says they're open Monday through Friday from 9 to whatever the. And that big sliding door is, it's open. But if I'm Joe Blow from Quincy and I'm going by that park, that fence, and that, it's closed. You go up to it, you can open it, but why is it, it should be opened. So when somebody comes, let's use it. And like Charles said, there's a cloud. So many different rules. You have to do this, you have to do that. Why? Why? I would like personally to have these boys be able to play where I grew up, where Sean Logan coached me. And honestly, it's like having a brand new Cadillac 2021 and having it parked inside your garage and saying, we have prestige. They're prestige. And I get it. You want to keep them nice and put the fence around it, but it's not open. It should be open for these boys. And if you look at our city, David Garza, Major League Baseball player, Alec Garcia, D1 player. I can keep going on and on of these boys that were raised up on those fields that these boys look up to, that they should also be able to do. So I'm going to ask the council members to please be proactive, like Charles said, and make sure that those gates stay open and that these boys don't have to worry about, can I use the park? Why? The league's over, and I get it. It's important. It's scheduled. These boys should be able to play on that field. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
My name is Doug Barker. I live at 674 South 3rd. I want to tell the council, I didn't know what shape those fields were going to be in, frankly, because I watched the construction for months and months and months, or it seemed like months and months and months. But I was very pleasantly surprised once my grandson started playing on them. I think they're a gigantic improvement over what they should be. My concern is the fee that would be charged for teams outside the city league to use that, considering it's a public park. I believe the city council or the mayor is in the progress of trying to upgrade the playground equipment, which is a positive, because that's a drawing point for the citizens. And we don't charge to use the basketball courts. We don't charge to use the skate park. And there's a reason for that. There are just some things that government provides for the well-being of our community. And so I would just hope that the council takes that into consideration when you're starting to assess fees that are going to increase costs. And I realize the Bombers are not part of the City League necessarily, but my guess is most of these boys played in the City League at some, although this year we only had two major league teams and three minor league, which was unfortunate. But I think COVID, hopefully next year it's going to be better. But by, you know, each of the players were charged a fee to play in the City League, rightfully so, you know. So it's got to be something more reasonable than what the costs are. And I'll let the coaches from the Bombers speak to that. I'm just here as a grandpa, you know, with a couple of boys that are going to keep playing there. I would hate to see those fields just set there all summer long or the rest of this summer without them being used. I think that's just a waste of all the, you know, the, as I understand it, the city went out and got a grant, which is fantastic. It's still tax money, but it didn't come directly out of the city's funds. So we were able to upgrade there. And I assume the playground equipment will be the same. We're going to get some grant money, upgrade the park, make it even a better place to go to. Because like Robert or Charles, I can't remember now, it was too long ago, pointed out, it's an icon. It's a meeting place. And we certainly used to have softball tournaments almost every year or all summer long. Some of that stuff died off. Okay, that's fine. You know, whatever happened there. But everyone knows Lions Park if you've ever been to Othello. And I would hate to see it just set there idle simply because we can't come together for some, you know, reasonable fees for usage or perhaps the teams, in the case of the Bombers, perhaps the coaches could take care of field prep, and not in the sense of dragging it necessarily and watering, but, you know, lining it and some of those things that it wouldn't cost the city employee or you know, whoever does that stuff. I just think there could be some concessions made, and I think communications is the main thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. There you go.
I'm Rigo Zuna. I live at 925 East Hamlet Street. I wasn't really prepared to speak tonight because, you know, Charles and Robert stepped up and wanted to talk for our group, but I feel like I wouldn't do it justice if I didn't come here, who was one of the founding fathers of the Bombers. I think where this all stemmed out from is wanting to charge the kids just to practice. As I understand it, city was awarded a grant. I'm not sure if you members know, but I also helped part of writing that grant, which Charles spoke on. The reason for them asking me at that time to help write that grant, it was because we had an Eddie Allen tournament that was here where we got rained out and the fields were horrible. It probably took 2 to 3 days for the water to get off the field and so forth. So I took pictures of the field because I love this community. I've been here all my life, except for the 4 years I was in Pullman. But other than that, I've lived here all my life. I grew up on those baseball fields. My kids, they still play. They love playing baseball. And it's worrisome that we're sitting here talking about kids having to pay for practice on the field. I just don't get it. I honestly don't. This is why I don't talk, by the way. you know, a lot of these kids are amazing kids. They work their butts off. They show up to practice every day. Their parents are committed. And everyone knows I'll do anything for these kids. So I just don't see why we're so hungry for money and charging these kids. You know, somebody tells me that it's because you guys run an organized practice. And when I sit there and think about that word organized practice, is it because we're an organization or we actually want to define organized? A parent playing with their kid on that ballpark is an organized practice. When you're sitting there throwing a baseball at a kid for him to work on his swing, that's an organized practice. But yet we're not charging everybody to use those fields. For some reason, it seemed like we're just singled out. And it's frustrating. We're not a wealthy team. We're not the Bellinghams. We're not the Seattles. These parents fight and crawl and just to make the money, just to play this, to play on this team. It represents a strong character. It forms leadership. It's less for the police to go worry about kids going out there graffitiing and all that stuff. These kids, trust me, they work at practice. They're tired. They're too tired to go out at night and try to graffiti something. They're tired. And it was something that was instilled in me when I was a kid. My grandpa did that to, he did that to us. He worked our butts off playing baseball. And this is something that I wanted to do for the community, for these kids. And this is what I love to do. I've been doing it for 15 years. I don't plan on giving up soon. I have a daughter coming through who's 7. I don't want to have these same arguments or these same coming to city council because you guys want to charge them to practice on a baseball field when it's just sitting there empty. Even like today, the fields are tarps, the tarps are off. That's great. And, but there's no bases on the field. And it's fine because some of us have throwdown bases, and that's totally fine. But some of the teams, like I said, these parents are scrappy for money. So if we keep on increasing their fees just to be able to pay for a park that they already paid taxes on or that we were granted to by the city, it's frustrating as a coach. Like Robert said, I had a kid. He's actually right. Where's he at? Julian. There's Julian right there. Actually took one off the lip at first base at the softball field. They hit a dirt pile there, came up, knocked him right in the face, had a fat lip for a couple days. We have these great fields that supposedly, they're the same work that happened on Safeco Field. That's amazing. Can you imagine being a kid? If I was a kid at that age, to say that, hey, I played on a baseball field that has the same sand or the same rock that is at a Major League Baseball field, their dreams, the sky's the limit. I have a thing in my office that says don't be limited by other people's limitations. And that basically says is that, 7% or 5% of high school kids go on to play college ball and stuff. Why can't these kids? And it starts with practice. But we can't sit there and afford practices for every single day that we're out there because we're trying to make money off these kids. That's all I got to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Rio. Yeah. So, is there anyone else? I want to thank everybody for coming. Yes.
It seems like everybody has the same passion and the same direction and the same goals. And I got to believe the city ultimately wants those same goals to bring more teams into town, to generate more revenue. So why don't we form like a committee with members from not just local teams and in the area and try to network together to help bring some of these youth tournaments back and some of the softball tournaments and I'd be glad to help and network all the people that I know because I have plans of putting a big slate on the next year. I'd love to do that. Maybe get a couple of council members involved and get them back in the loop so they can see firsthand. You guys know. You live here. You grew up. You know what it's about. But I just don't think we're utilizing what we have to at our beck and call. Unlike adult softball, youth baseball, parents are crazy. Look at them. They're in here saying, hey, man, we just want to play. Now you look at it from the city side, these parents go spend money every weekend somewhere else. Why can't they spend it here? And you utilize that tool that we have. I think if we network together, you come up with a price structure to help build it. And obviously, the more teams that come, it's a lot easier to pay those fees down the road. So like I said, I'd gladly throw that out there to help. I'd love to do it. I got lots of free time. My son's not playing no more, so.
Okay. Thanks, Charles. Do you want me to go? Or do you guys do want to say something?
Well, he left. Well, anyway, what I would like to say is I serve on the Park and Rec Committee, and this is the first I'm hearing of the problems that you guys are having. And as far as the fees go, I think there's some misconception on what needs to be charged for and what, you know, what you think you've got to pay. So if you're going to reserve the right to practice on a field, and that prohibits all others from the city utilizing that field, then you pay a fee for that. Okay? Otherwise, I can come and sit my fat ass right in the middle of your baseball game and sit there. It gives you the right to reserve that and utilize that. And you have every right to tell me to leave if you've paid the fee. So, you know, I would like to clear up the misconceptions. I don't understand why the tarps are left on the field and they can't be utilized. If a team wants to go practice and they understand that they're just going there to practice, okay, and if somebody else comes and gets involved or whatever, then you don't have any right to tell them to leave. But you're there to practice. And I don't think it would happen. But I don't understand where the disconnect is with regard to being able to utilize the fields.
Can I say? I think we're more saying, why would there be a penalty? Can we just kind of reserve it every day or twice a week without that payment? I mean, everybody's already shaking their head no. But we're saying there's other things that we might be able to do, like for a fundraiser or something. But it's more of if we're a city representing the city, why does the city provide that too? You know, because we're already doing payments for other things. We're already doing payments for to go to other cities. Why in order for you guys to bring us home here, why couldn't we kind of be more city? Because we represent Othello no matter what, where we go. That's more of that question. Like, it's not okay. We understand the reservation.
It's for one thing, it's against the law to gift city-owned property to individuals or teams or anyone else. And by the city gifting you the right to practice and solely have the right to practice, we would be violating that law. Now, we could make arrangements for lighter fees. We could make arrangements for conditional use and things like that. But we cannot allow you to reserve a field exclusively and prohibit other people from the city using that at any time.
Can I clarify something with you, John? I understand what you're saying and the gifting part of it. I think what's unclear amongst all of us and probably haven't done our due diligence is there a way for this group to find out what your actual costs, how you came up with the number and what those costs are? And then I guess my follow-up question would be, so if I want to during the 4th of July and rodeo, when we have that stuff, are the basketball courts charged a use fee? Because those are reserved strictly for that three-on-three tournament.
There was we actually waived the fee for the Chamber of Commerce, but the whole thing that was done during the 4th of July weekend was a Chamber of Commerce.
No, we didn't waive the fee. They paid a special event fee, so it is reserved. So that's part of that special
part
event.
Of the Chamber
they
of Commerce.
They basically get the use of the park.
Well, I would just say, especially for the coaches from the Bombers that are here and stuff, maybe you could help explain what those costs are so we can understand it. I totally understand what you're talking about, the gifting part.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to meet with them in a committee meeting where they would come and express their concerns to the committee so that we could bring it back to the rest of the council with the representatives from the Park and Rec. And if you want to talk, go back up to the microphone. But so that we could come to an understanding of what their issue is and what, and they understand what our issue is. We're not wanting to prohibit anybody from playing at those parks.
And that would also give staff a time to get together that information that you were asking for, and that could be presented in the, because we went through a whole process. It took, I don't know, it was like a year that we went through a whole process of determining how to do that with the fees and everything.
So John, I understand what they're trying to say, but I haven't communicated with them is we understand the whole reserving part and we're totally fine with that. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, so we threw a tournament here 2 years ago and stuff, totally fine paying the fees and all stuff because it was the park. The park was us. And I understand the city workers helping us. So we're totally fine with that. It was just the misconception, I guess, from the Parks and Recs was telling us, hey, you're practicing your organization. You need to pay to practice on the fields. That's what we were told. They had a sheet and all stuff. And so I was like, well, we're just practicing. I can't afford $28 a day for 4 days a week for 4 weeks out of the month. We can't afford that. That's an astronomical amount of stuff for the kids to afford.
That's what I was going to say. I think we should revisit it. You know, if it comes to practicing, I'd rather see the kids in the field practicing. Mm-hmm. I go by there every day. I love when I see people on the field. I'd rather see them in the fields than out there doing something, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was going to say, too, that the issue isn't the fact that you're practicing, because you could go out there and practice. Mm-hmm. You guys could go out there and practice for no fee. Mm-hmm. But the problem is if anybody else is on those fields, and you can't kick them off.
Correct. Yeah, no.
You can't reserve that time if you haven't paid the fee. What you're paying the fee for is exclusive use.
Correct, and we've done that before. Where they came and say, hey, we have the field. Yeah. Hey, no problem, we go to the outfield grass or we go somewhere
but
else.
You are more than welcome to go out there and practice any time. Okay. Without a fee. It's just that if it's already being used, you can't, even if you planned your practice.
Because there's even talks of them coming to us and they want us to sign a contract to practice on the field, just to use the field. And it would be reserved for us and all that, but we're just like, well, we just want to show up and practice. If there's nobody using the fields, we'll practice. If somebody comes, it's reserved, or a fat ass, whatever, sits there on the ground, I hope they bring a glove because our kids can hit pretty hard. And if they can catch a line drive, you know, then you got to move out the way. So, we're totally fine with that, and I'm pretty sure community members won't just do that, just sit in the middle of our practice without the field being reserved.
Well, nobody, I don't think anybody's going to come out there and sit in the middle of your practice.
And so,
but even if there was little kids out there playing.
We won't kick them off. We're not going to kick them off. No, we've seen community members out there practicing with their kids, and if they're using the field, we're just like, oh, you guys, we'll just practice over here until they're done. We're totally fine with that. It's just constantly getting approached, hey, you know, you're an organized organization, you need to sign a contract to practice on these fields. And so I look at it as a sense is, even if it's $1,500 between five teams, you're still raising the fee of the players for $100. I mean, we go through three or four fundraisers just for them to make the fees. Our parents don't make much money. You know, so that's just the frustrating part, because I got to go to explain to them, hey, this is why your kids' fees, if we weren't allowed to practice on those fields. You know, and like what Charles says, we want to work with the city. Like I said, we threw a tournament here. We had, I don't know, probably 12 teams come, and they loved Othello. They were saying how awesome Othello was. Even the Lions Park fields, before the renovation, they said they loved those fields, which is weird. But, I mean, you guys know, we play on those fields. There's rocks everywhere. But we want to do that more of next year. You know, now that COVID's done, we want to throw more tournaments. We want to bring city money. And I've had a conversation with Mayor T. Like, we want to throw more. We had side conversations about what the future plans for Othello would be, especially when coming to those ball fields. And so we're here, we want to work with you guys. We just feel like we're getting kind of pushed back just because we want to practice. You know, my older group, we went to the World Series in Colorado at the age of 11 and stuff. And, you know, they had 2,000 kids participating to try out for their team, and we had 15 and stuff. And we still took fourth place. And they were just, you know, they were astounded, like, where are you guys from? Othello, where's that? And we explained Othello. Like, you know, we're, you know, untapped talent. You know, I had a great conversation with my baseball coach in high school and stuff like that, and how he wanted to come to Othello just because of the talent these kids have. But we're a small community. Nobody knows about us. It's us going out there, showing them what Othello is about, showing them that we represent our colors, we represent our town with high standards. We, you know, we respect the umpires. You know, and if everybody who's played baseball before who knew what the parents were in Othello prior to the Bombers, was always arguing with the umpires. Everybody hated playing Othello because the umpires didn't want to deal with it. Our parents are the first more pretty tamed, you know, and we have that because we don't want Othello to get that bad name. We want umpires to come here. We have umpires asking me, you know, when we're throwing the next tournament because they want to come here. And we feed them tacos when they're here, but whatever. So we want to work with the city. We want to throw more tournaments. You know, like I said, like Charles said, let's work together instead of against each other. I think that's where it would be more beneficial.
Charles hit it on the head. We need to sit down together, because right now there's a good core of people that are involved in youth athletics, and I think we need to, you know, get past this misconception mm-hmm. of what you think we're trying to do and what we are not trying to do. Okay. So yeah. let's sit down and talk it over in a committee meeting, and
that'd be awesome. We'll definitely know.
Our staff can be there too as well, okay. So that we can get this resolved.
Okay, I appreciate your guys' time. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Riggo, you had me until you said you lived for 4 years in Pullman. Yeah. So I'm going to give you a quick history that'll help this group understand some context. When I was Rigo's son's age, I used to go down to the ballpark every week because they had a softball tournament. Othello had the first fourplex softball tournament in the state of Washington. So from the time I was 12 through 18, I used to go and we had the Seattle police would come. There wasn't very many baseball hardball tournaments, but it was mainly men's slow pitch. That was the big deal. And then over time, the ball fields, the city just never really spent a lot of money on the ball fields. And so they got to a place where you saw that outfield, that lip, where all the dragging of the fields created about a 12 to 16 inch lip around the field. And so other cities, like communities like Tri-Cities and Yakima, they developed four field complexes and more. And so a lot of those tournaments left Othello and went to the larger cities. And one of the things that other thing that contributed to that is at a time there was Othello Youth Baseball. That was a really big group. It was a group of parents, and they ran the baseball league, and coaches coached, kids played. But then eventually what happened is those people aged out. And so then they came and approached the city, and they asked us to take over the league. And this was about 5 years ago. So that's when the city took over the leagues. And when we here at the city council heard that, hey, we got to get the tournaments back, we want to get them back here, that's where we went through this process. We got the grant. We improved the ball fields. Terrific. Everybody agrees. It's wonderful. Problem was then last year we had a pandemic. And so nobody could play. And so one of the things that we are doing is some of this takes time. Another obstacle to having tournaments here in Othello, where is everybody going to stay? There's really not a ton of hotel space in Othello. So the problem is bigger than just the ball fields. There's a larger regional problem that we have here in Othello. And we're trying to do things as a city council to change and allow and attract that type of facilities and commercial businesses in order to, if you want to have a state girls fast pitch tournament here, you got to have a fence around it. But if you're going to have a slow pitch tournament that people want to charge an entry fee to get in, You got to have a fence around it. But you're also going to have places for people to eat and places for people to stay. We don't have much of a facility for RV park. So we have obstacles here in this community that are stopping us from getting all the tournaments back. So you address your problems one at a time. Getting now down to the fellow youth, to the Bombers, you know, I think that we can work together, and I think that one of the things that the city would like to do is we would like the Bombers to be, as a team, be in our league. But we recognize that with the pandemic and the level of skill level that the kids have that aren't on the Bombers, as you notice, that the skill level needs to be brought up. And so I understand why sometimes you guys don't, I mean, it's not a favorable thing to maybe play a team that you're going to beat 20-1. I mean, that's no fun. So as I look at this, the Park and Rec Department is looking at having a coaches clinic so that we can teach these coaches, new coaches, potential coaches, what they need to focus on with these kids when they have practice so that they can build that skill level and they can become better players. And then we want to have, and we'd like to get the Rudy Ochoas and the other coaches that know how to coach to be a part of that, to build that part of it up. And then we want to have a players clinic. And the players clinic would have the Alex Garcias, the Nathan Garzas, the families that know how to, the players that played at a high level, teach the kids what they need to focus on. If they want to be better ball players, then what that's going to take some time too. But what it'll do is it'll build the skill level so that the Bombers, instead of having five practices a week, they have three practices a week and then two games during the middle of the week, and that'll keep them sharp too. So these are the things that we've been thinking about, we've been talking about, obviously not talking enough about because we have a room full of people who are concerned about the direction of what we're doing with these parks. I think part of it too is some of the, as John pointed out, I think it's a misconception. Ball fields are still first come, first serve. But the Othello Youth Baseball, we took over Othello Youth Baseball, and they pay a fee, basically, their entry fees, and we organize it. It's still done by all volunteers, coaches, and everything else. And so they have the priority because they have paid the fee. However, that was only a six-week season. Because of the pandemic, we still weren't sure whether we could have a season this year. So it was kind of thrown together at the last hour. So we've had some difficulties here at the city that have made us, it should just show some of the weaknesses that we have. But those weaknesses aren't things that are deal breakers. And I feel like we can work together. I feel like we can put this together. We can have tournaments back here. But some of the things that the city and the community need to work together on, we need development. We need to have another hotel in this town. We need to have an RV park in this town. I mean, it's a lot cheaper if you're on the travel circuit with your kids to go stay at an RV park and you have a couple of parents take their motor homes and then they can take all the kids and the parents. I don't need to get into all that, but it just makes it a heck of a lot more economical to do it than that. But we don't have that type of scenario here where we can make that work. Those are our challenges. We want to work together with the Bombers. We want to work together with anybody who wants to make this better. And I know the Park and Rec Department, we have Sammy's here tonight, Sammy. And Madison is out for a little bit, but she'll be back. But our goal over this next year is to make this work for everyone. But just so everybody knows, It is still first come, first served. Yes, if you guys want to go down there and practice after this tonight, you can go down there and practice. As long as you're not taking over a field that somebody else is playing on, that's still the rule. All the gates are unlocked.
Because if I drive by there and it's closed, then people aren't going to be in it. They have the whole thing fenced off. I guarantee you, if you open up that gate, Sean, and I get the one that has the one with the cars, open it up. So as you're driving by, oh, you know what? It's open. Most people don't know that it's open because, yeah, it's closed, it's open, but nobody's going to open it. That door should be open. So anybody coming by there can see that it's open. Guess what? We're going to go there. You don't know how it works, but from the outside community looking in, it's not inviting. You have the whole thing fenced in. Nobody can get in except for the front. And that door is not closed. Yeah, you can go and open it, but a suggestion I make for Sandy, that door needs to be open. Lock it open. And then, just like in the cemetery, have somebody close it, and then more kids will use it. But what's happening now is the community members are driving by there, and it's closed. So that needs to be better on you guys.
We'll work on that. Okay. Yep. We'll work on that, Robert. So, does that kind of make more sense now as to where the city's coming from? We realize that the baseball fields are at one level, and that's what directly affects you guys. But there's some other things that are affecting all of us that need to that we're trying to address. But honestly. I think it was Rigo or maybe it was Charles was saying, and it was Rigo, when Marnie, my daughter, was playing girls' fast pitch, had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to drive to Sela to play an 8 o'clock game against Sela. They score 3 runs, get the jump on us in the first inning because our girls still hadn't even wiped the sleep out of their eyes yet, and we lose the game 5-2 or 5-3, and I'm just like, why are we driving to Sela? Why can't we start having these tournaments in Othello and make Sela get up at 4 in the morning and them come down here and play us at 8 o'clock, and why don't we get the advantage on these teams? Well, to do that, all those things that I explained about, hotels, restaurants, RV parks, those play a part. But we did the first part, and that is we got the field surfaces to a place where now it's a top quality level. We'll keep working together. Fair enough? Does anybody have any other comments? Thank you. Appreciate you coming. Yep. So as we moved in our agenda, I would entertain a motion to approve our agenda tonight.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. How about the consent agenda?
Make that motion.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Let's move now to our current business. 4A is the approval of a facility use agreement and resolution for the car show. All Cities Classic Car Show has an annual event every year that is coming up July. That's this Friday and Saturday. Yep. And we have Jack Purdy here with us tonight, and we have Bob Doval. Bob, I'm sorry. Well, I mean, I know I was getting distracted or something, Bob. I apologize. Cindy wouldn't forgive me, but at least you will. Just kidding. Great event. This is really one of the events in Othello that puts on that brings people from out of town. I mean, this is tremendous. It's been going on. How many years has it been?
25 years.
25 years now.
22 old, we missed last year.
Except for last year, right? So they're going to do the slow drags. Is my understanding? Is that correct? right up front here at City Hall. That arrangement's been made with the police department. And, yes, Chief?
My understanding is don't stop traffic for that. You know, we put up codes, those 331, not 4th, 7th.
It's pretty good, Bill. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. It's good every year. And that's Friday night from 6 to 9. And then the car show Saturdays from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. What do you guys do at 6 a.m.? Just to get set up. All right. Yeah. Yeah, I notice it just continues to get better every year. Vendors, everything. It's good. It's a great event. So, the staff is recommending that the City Council approve this resolution authorizing the use of Main Street and Kiwanis Park by the Othello Chapter of the All Cities Car Classic Car Club for the July 16th and July 17th. That's this Friday and Saturday event. So, is there anything you guys want to add?
No, we just thank the city and whatnot for letting us do this for 25 years.
You don't want to sell the City Council tickets? While you're here?
Yeah.
Actually, the event is free. The tickets are for the raffle. Yeah. Okay. That, I'd entertain a motion to approve this resolution.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Bob and Jack. Appreciate you guys coming tonight. So then I'll move now to item 4B, which is the approval and facility use and resolution for the CBHA color run. So the color run, the initial thrust of that was 3 years ago when what is now the CEO, I think he was just become the CEO then, Nieves Gomez, in honor of his son Liam Taylor Gomez, who had suffered from a condition of spinal muscular atrophy and then died of that condition. I just wanted to mention his name again tonight, just to honor him and honor his memory. That was the initial inspiration to start this CBHA run. Now they've broadened it to raise awareness of childhood conditions that affect families here in the Columbia Basin. They've had they have several coordinated color stops along the way. I believe the route starts at CBHA and it runs through the city. And I'm not exactly sure where it ends, but I think we have on the call tonight is Courtney Martinez. Are you present, Courtney?
Yes, I'm here.
Do you want to... you want to talk a little bit about the event and the route to the City Council?
Yes, it's going to start and finish on Columbia Street right on the flank. It will go through, it'll be the same route, and there are 16 stations along the way, and they range from orange and blue to yellow and purple. They have sponsors for each color station, promoting them on social media, and we have a banner at the color station. The race begins at 9 a.m. on Saturday, August 28th. It's the last Saturday of August moving forward, so it's a really easy day to remember in the future. It'll end around 11. The race will end when it, the last person crosses, but when people cross the finish line, there will be food vendors, tent activities, lawn activities, music, so it will be a great family event.
Thank you, Courtney. Any questions, City Council?
Where is that event taking place? Did she say, is it?
It starts at CBHA on Columbia Street, and then it goes through the community up 14th. The route, does it go up 14th Avenue to Main, or does it go, what's the route?
Yeah, it will. When it starts there, Columbia Street, right at 14th there, in front of the clinic, you'll take a right, and then you will immediately take a left on Scooting. You'll go down to 7th Avenue, you'll take a right by the park, keep going by the high school, you take a left there on
Hemlock? Is it on Hemlock?
Yes, and, yes, thank you, Hemlock. You take a left there, you take another near right, eventually you move back to Main Street by Pioneer Park. There'll be another train station. You keep going down on Main Street. You'll go past another train station, which the city of Lobella has graciously sponsored. You'll go by another one, by Anytime Fitness. Keep going to 14. You'll take a right down on the 14. Keep going. You'll eventually take a left right in front of the elementary school there by, you know, the corner of Cemetery Street.
Scoot me.
You'll be at the train station in front of the second elementary school, and then you will finish where you started.
Thank you, Courtney. Wonderful event. There is some, you know, interruption to traffic with the crossings, but by and large, it's on the sidewalk. Is that right, Courtney?
That's correct. Initially, it'll be quite a bit. You do usually have several hundred that register, so the police will be really important there to help guide and stop traffic. And then they'll mostly be on the sidewalk, and then as they finish at Cemetery Street, there is 14 will cross over. So there'll be some, you know, traffic alterations, but just in the morning hours, and yeah, just for good cause, one day in.
Thank you, Courtney. With that, I'd entertain a motion to approve this resolution for the use of the city property for the Columbia Basin Health Association Run for a Cause.
I'll make that motion.
Get a question.
Yes.
So there's no cost to the city, basically, except for a little bit of police service at the beginning. They're not putting out any garbage cans. They're
they
not.
They put out cones.
Okay. Yeah, CBHA is taking care of everything. So I don't believe we should be charging a special event fee. There's no cost to the city for it. They're not using parks, they're not using garbage service, they're not using anything.
Council has that authority.
And I mean, that's $216 for childhood illnesses that they could be using towards that.
How about we donate our fee to the cause?
We waive the fee.
We waive it.
Yeah, I don't want to take it in and then disperse it. I'd rather if we just waive it.
So I need you to withdraw your motion.
I withdraw my motion.
And you want to make a new one?
I will make the motion to approve the resolution authorizing use of city property for the Columbia Basin Health Association Run for a Cause Saturday, August 28th, 2020, and waiving the special event fee.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. So, Courtney, did you hear that?
I did. I'm very, very grateful for that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for attending and being patient. This took a while to get to this. And thank you for explaining the route. Okay, so before Jack and Bob leave, I just want to explain the difference is they're not, that group is, they're, you know, the difference is your group, we're providing the garbage and the park and the use of the park for the entire day, whereas what they're doing is they're basically, they're self-contained, they're not, you, yeah, the city isn't really providing any services to them. So, okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for coming tonight.
Well, hopefully they
can. Yes. Right? Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
I know.
Kids. He didn't agree to that, did he?
I didn't have nothing to do with that. I'm not committed.
Well, I am, but I didn't know we were going to do that, man.
Yes, yeah. I was going to actually ask questions about some of this.
We didn't talk about that many.
Mm-hmm. We said from 7 to 14th and Ashta Hemlock.
Well, we're certainly going to get an opinion of what people like about them or don't like about them.
All right, well, let me get into the agenda item here. Yeah, let's keep. So I'm going to move along here to item 4C, traffic circles. Tonight we have with us our city engineer, Sean O'Brien. And Sean, this is basically informational, correct? Looking for a consensus and direction from the council. Is that right?
Yes, providing information, and you guys can go with it from there. So, Mayor, Council, back on June 7th, the Planning Commission, Chris, Doro, and Alma, they presented you with their street safety plan to City Council, and it recommended an action for existing neighborhood streets, and that action was to install traffic circles or mini roundabouts at several of our residential intersections, and also recommended doing it in a limited area, kind of doing a little pilot study to see how effective that was. The plan was just a one-page document, didn't provide a whole lot of details with dimensions, materials, size, location of that pilot study. So I spoke with Chris a little bit more to make sure I had a good understanding of their vision, and kind of worked up a little design and a pilot study location. We took that to the Water Sewer Street Committee later that month, and they recommended going with what was presented to them. I don't know if you can pull up in your packet you have kind of the design that we were looking at. This was just doing a structure in the middle of the intersections, which would divert traffic to slow down and go around. Keep on scrolling down. We were proposing just to use a 4-inch kind of parking lot traffic bumper, parking bumper, and also traffic candles. And then for the pilot study location, which would be the next attachment, was kind of focusing on the area between 7th and 14th Avenue, and then Main Street and the schools. Ash Street, several of those intersections are being addressed with the Bulb Out project, but this would give us a good case study to see if we could reduce the cut-through traffic, reduce speeds, because in this area, I've got some numbers on. It averages between 12 and 18 accidents per year happen in this location, in this area. A portion of those are at intersections. A portion of those are at mid-block sites. The hope is that by doing this, we would be able to compare numbers for a calendar year and see how much we reduce traffic. This design is about as inexpensive as I think we can come up with, and it'd also be easily removable if we decided we didn't like that design, wanted to change the size, whatever, it was a limited investment. But at this point, we don't really have a schedule or a firm commitment. We're still working on the design of this. One option, if you can go back to the design, instead of doing a diamond, we could actually make it an octagon. The concern was that might be a little harder to lay out, but I think I've got it set up where we could do it fairly, hold something about that same dimension, but that would look a little more circular, maybe fit in there. So I have talked with the fire department, and Gary is going to, we painted out one at Hemlock and 8th, just for an example. He was going to take his fire trucks around that and see what his thoughts were, give us some comments. We picked a location that has a fire hydrant at that intersection. And then we're meeting with the school district tomorrow to kind of take some input from them and see how they feel this will affect. Well, we're going to look at where their bus routes are, and going straight through these shouldn't be a problem. Making a left-hand turn will be a little bit more difficult, but with a traffic circle, you are allowed to cut the corner. A little unorthodox, but we'll continue to work on this design, and just wanted to present this to you to see if it was what you were envisioning when Planning Commission presented this to you, and take any input that you have. But main thing is for you guys to discuss, and before we proceed very much further, make sure that we're all on the same page.
What's that going to do to 10th and Juniper?
10th and Juniper would be...
It's going to be a lot more busy.
10th and Juniper are going to, are what we have designated in our traffic classification map as the collectors in that area. So they would be signed that cars would have to stop when they come to those intersections. My recommendation is we'll put stop bars out there to try to emphasize that the stop signs are there. And the question would be, you know, is Juniper or 10th going to be the majority one, which who's going to have to stop going which direction.
So if you put like four stop signs in Juniper or 10th, then?
Prefer to leave it, just one would be the major street, which 10th is the one that's really taking you from a true event, look, you know, someplace where there is a congregation of people, the schools, and having them go to Main Street, delivering you to our Main Streets. I think 10th, my personal opinion, would be the priority street over Juniper, but that is something we can discuss.
Yeah, because they will turn into collector for sure.
That's what council and planning commission designated them as. And that is the hope, is that,
yeah.
I mean, we talked about with Ash Street, well, if you do something at Ash, they're just going to move over to Oak.
That's the whole idea.
And that is correct, well, because we have built all these streets to be wide enough to handle, I mean, cars have been cutting through this neighborhood.
Well, 10th has the sidewalk all the way out right. It, so that's why we've designated that one.
Yes, 10th has sidewalk for the pedestrians to be on it. Juniper does not.
Will there be a stop sign at Juniper and 10th?
One direction would have a stop sign.
And what he's saying is that since 10th actually goes from Main Street to the schools.
To the schools.
To the schools. And that may be the main thoroughfare, the one that doesn't get the stop sign. As opposed to Juniper.
Done
yes.
That's how it's right on course it's off 11, but that would be contiguous with what has always been there. To have so, that sort of thoroughfare yeah. through that area.
And I was at the committee meeting where we discussed this, and one of the concerns that was brought up at council was that if we do a study on one of the streets, because we talked about doing this on, say, Oak, right next to Ash, because Ash is doing bulbouts, we were going to do this down Oak, and then it was like, well, that just pushes the traffic down another street. So the idea was, once we found out that the traffic circles, diamonds, were fairly inexpensive. There are, I think, only about $600 an intersection. If I remember
I'm thinking about $700, $800 in materials,
yeah.
And then there'll be the installation.
But it was fairly inexpensive per intersection, even compared to putting stop signs in. And the idea was that, sorry, I've got a tickle in my throat. If we do the entire area from Hemlock to Oak, then we are going to get an actual idea of how well this works. Because we're going from 7th to 14th, Hemlock to Oak, that is not going to allow the traffic to be just pushed down to the next road.
So why would you put it on Ash Street? Isn't bulbouts going all the way down there?
No.
Those are the two blocks that there's no bulbouts?
Yeah, there's no bulbouts.
Those bulbouts, yeah, that's... It's not on the school's walking routes to school.
And I got to say, he painted it a block from my house, and I saw you out there painting it. And I went
yep,
and got
you went.
We grabbed grips, and we drove around it, and I have no problem whatsoever getting the Suburban around it.
I think these are a great idea.
I think they're awesome.
You like them, Corey?
I do.
Yes.
Good.
I do.
I was ready for an argument. Hallelujah.
Can we
stop the meeting right there?
Yeah.
Hey, there's a lot of things I like.
Hallelujah.
I have talked to multiple people within our neighborhood, and they're in favor of it too, because they would like to see this traffic stop flying down the road.
I thought, oh God.
The one thing I would recommend, because we were out there and we drove around it multiple times, different directions. The only thing that I can foresee being an issue is people parking really close to the corners. illegally parking really close to the corners, and maybe we might need to go out and paint some corners yellow.
That would be something we'll, you know, learn from the pilot study. We, either they will naturally park further away because of the...
But if they do park close, it's going to make it a lot more difficult to get around. I mean, you're going to be able to do it, but it's just, it's going to make it that much more difficult to get around.
Okay, let's start with, we'll start with Gary, and then I'm going to go to Eugene.
Thank you for bringing that up. If they park too close to the corner, it's a bigger vehicle, the first responders, the school bus, or even maybe one of the collection trucks may not be able to maneuver it as well as they can. If we paint the lines back farther, or originally the way they should be, but it's got to be enforced.
Yeah.
So we go back to an enforcement.
Yeah. But that's going to be really easy to pick out if we have the lines painted. If the corners are painted yellow, they're parked next to yellow.
And then the curbing is only a 4-inch tall curb.
Yeah.
So in an emergency situation, a fire truck could definitely drive over them. Hope school buses aren't driving over them every single day. That would maybe wear them down. But with the design, with the materials we're using, it'd be fairly... It would be very easy to pull them out and reconfigure them if we come up with a, different ideas.
Eugene?
If you could, at some point, look at North 4th Avenue, with all the houses that are being built and the houses being built, which is beautiful, great additions to the college for the most part. They're coming down to Olympia, if they're heading to like 26 and stuff like that, they're hitting 4th Avenue there. It's a drag race.
4th Avenue from Main to Olympia?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're coming off Olympia there at 4th Avenue at night. Or when they're coming home at night, they're coming down.
4th Avenue or 7th?
4th.
Yeah. I've been telling you guys about that for months, and you guys are looking at me like,
It's amazing how much traffic is picked up. It's just unbelievable.
And it's narrower there, too.
Yeah, I wonder about all the speed bumps,
but
anyway.
It's a little slower on the uptake.
That's no, you just blow me off, is what it is.
No, it's blowing me off.
All right, we'll look at that.
Yeah, I mean, just throwing that out, tossing that out.
Yeah, he's doing it.
I've been saying paint's cheap, too.
Yeah.
Now you're talking about painting things.
I'm just saying they can't park back. So
you always look at me like
I'm listening to your conversation.
you always look at me like I'm stupid because I say paint's cheap. Let's get some lines painted. And now you're talking about painting corners. So it's like, God, what I say is falls on deaf ears or what?
You talk about painting center lines of roads.
I'm talking about painting, period. Stop lines, center lines. Parking lines. Now we're talking about painting curbs. That's great. I love it.
So I know a few years ago that during the spring cleanup, the city donated or supplied the paint, and then citizens went and painted the curbs the yellow. That might be something they could do if it comes down to that.
So for the back to the agenda item, though, I know this isn't going to go without incident. I mean, you're talking about...
It's been very warmly accepted. I thought there might be people going, this is odd, nobody else does this. But
no, I mean, Sean, what I mean is that...
So it should push into the streets they're supposed to use.
I understand the, you know, we got to have a test area. I understand that it's got to be size enough. This just, to me, it's a really big sample size, but.
But this is going to achieve what they're looking for. Moving them to a point, and if Corey likes it, I'm. There's no question I'm going to vote for it, you know.
Then I guess you got your consensus.
Yes, go for it.
We will continue working. We'll take input from the fire department, talk to the police, or talk to the school district, and before we ever work with Spencer to see if there's funding to do it in this year's budget, so that my goal would be that we get it in before the end of the year, so that come January 1, we've got a full year's worth of DOT accident data to compare it to past years. So.
Sounds good, Sean. Thank you.
Great.
Let's move to 4D, which is the lot coverage and lot size intro. And tonight we have the pleasure of our community development director, Ann Henning. This is informational only because the planning commission is going to look at this next Monday, correct?
Correct.
Okay, let's go.
So there have been a number of permits that have come in this year where the lot size has been an issue. And everyone, I talked to the people, okay, here's the process. You know, if you don't like this, here's the process to change the code. And they're all afraid of you. They won't bring it to you. So when the last one came in, there were two triplexes, you know, same plan on adjoining lots. And it was 36% lot coverage instead of the 35. So I just started preparing it to just bring it to the planning commission to see what they thought about it. While I was working on that, I got a call from a planning commissioner saying, can we look at lot coverage and lot size? So that was a good congruence of thought there. So I looked at all of the other cities in Eastern Washington. Found out today I missed Walla Walla, so I looked them up, but it's not on the chart that I gave you tonight. But all the other ones, just so we have that information. There's a wide range of lot sizes, lot coverage across, you know, Eastern Washington. But when the planning commissioners looked at that, they thought they would like to look at increasing the lot coverage amount and maybe look at decreasing some of the lot sizes in the higher density zones. And I know last time Angel spoke about how lot coverage was an issue for him and lot size and the things that he's trying to develop. And it gives more options and allows more housing. So I just wanted to bring it to you before the Planning Commission had their public hearing. So if you have really strong opinions, I think it would be good for the Planning Commission to know that going into their hearing and before it comes to you as a full recommendation. And if you'd like to wait, just let them hold their hearing and give you the recommendation, that's fine too. But I wanted to give you the opportunity if you had things you wanted to say about it at this point.
And I believe in the lot size, we were talking on R3 and R4 only, right? Because I didn't hear nothing on R1 and R2. Reviewing it. You know, Chris and I talked about it here last week, I think it was. So if we don't, I just moved from R1 to R2 as soon as I go past Baker, Mount Baker. So R2, if we don't move that to at least 6,000, we're really not doing anything for that side of the development anyway. If you do R3 and R4, or I'm not R3 or R4. So as far as improving, trying to get more homes, higher density, it's not going to help my development. And I don't know what we plan to do since I'm north of town, and once we go east of town, going east of the canal, I don't know what zones you're going to put over there. The good thing about what I'm doing now is that even in an R2 from 7th to 11th, we have your homes ranging from 1,400 to 1,670 square feet. And we call those a signature series home. And if you guys drive by there, you'll notice that we have siding, a little bit of stone in the front and the garage, and T111 in the back. 8-foot ceilings, so that gets me more in the price range for old fellow. So if we don't move, if we don't get at least 6,000 square foot on an R2, we're stuck with exactly what we have right now on our development. So I really would like you guys to consider that, because that would get me, I don't know what we're going to do. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I could ask a question. Maybe it's knowledge for process. Because, of course, you can build, you know, we come up. I guess I could come up. You know, you can build anything,
you can build single-family dwellings on R4, R3, R2, R1. Any of that can be done. I think, you know, in the case, I mean, if we're going to go into a particular case, it's more the question that probably goes to Ann as well, how easy it would be for a developer to change once we make these changes. If they're like, well, R3 is more of the zoning I want to do here. Is that a complicated process to change? I mean, as I understood it, it was very easy. So if somebody had something already okayed for R2, to change that zoning to R3.
So it would be a planning commission and council process to change the comprehensive plan and change the zoning.
Is it easier to go down to 6,000 or rezone it? I think you're asking that, right? What's easier?
I'm saying, since you know,
I don't exactly know what the fees and what it all takes to do it, because my engineer does that. So what's more work to do as far as zoning or going or redoing this from a 7,200 square foot lot to a 6,000 square foot lot?
This is a great question all the way around, because it really falls into what kind of is the theory for our city planning. And part of that theory is you want each zone to increase a little bit in density. You know, so if you have an idea of what it is you're trying to do within that zone, how big you want the lots, we are probably more of the opinion that, you know, giving people a lot of zone options, with an R1 being a little different from R2, being a little different from R3, being a little different from R4, number one, gives the developer a lot of opportunity and options to do lots of different things, but also gives people understanding of what they're moving into, what are the possibilities, what are the circumstances, what are the expectations in density, which has really become, you know, a question for how we're going to deal with the housing issues that we have in Othello, how to make them more affordable, how to give opportunities to draw in more developers, how to bring in all this stuff. And I do want to also point out one important issue on this whole thing is, yeah, maybe a planning commissioner made a call, and it sounds like Ann was already thinking ahead on that, but it really was the study that we all read and took a look at that made us go, oh crud, we're an outlier. Let's use that tool.
We have a new fire truck.
No, not yet.
When was that to be delivered? Do you? Sorry, Jim.
About 12 months.
Oh, gee. Never mind. Have a good evening.
You're using that tool.
You gotta stop drinking, Sean.
To identify Othello's areas that we can change. So, Councilman Garza, I think that what you are bringing up is exactly what we should be talking about in our open meeting. Is what is the best theory for making this as easy as possible for everyone to accomplish what they want to do and to give the right opportunities and understandings for people in Othello. I hope that answered the question.
So 35%, what we're requiring right now, 35% of a 7,000 square foot lot in R2, that's 2,450 square feet in your whole. Are you building 2,400
from 7 to 11 is okay.
But are you building 2,450 square foot homes in your R2 development?
These
don't look like they're more than.
Yeah, because if they're 1,800, you got to add 600 for the garage. That's 2,400 covered area.
Really, those homes don't look like they're 2,400.
Yeah, not the 1,400s are up to about 2,000, but you have some 1670s and 1883s, whatever they are. They're up to about 2,400 square feet. So if you go from 11 to 14 is really where I get hurt for the lot coverage. Because we'll go into between 13 and 14, you know, we got some houses, some lots that are really about 12 to 13,000 square feet. And if I can only go with a 3,500 square foot home, but the garages are 1,000 because they're three-car garage. So really, I can only go with a 2,400 square foot home on a Rambler. So that's what really needs to change, because we're providing, for Othello, we're providing your entry home level, and we're providing on that side of town is your semi-custom home. So what I'd like to see, and I think it'd be better for the community also, is that we keep providing these nice homes for people that want to stick around, you know, people that have good jobs, doctors, whoever, and we've been doing that, is giving them that option to where they can put, if we go 4,500 square feet, we can put a 3,500 square foot home and a 1,000-foot garage. And I've lost a lot of those because they want a 3,500 square foot home. And it's pretty sad that we can't do it in a lot that's pretty much 12,000 square foot when you include the setbacks.
So I think the flexibility is key. One of the things I noticed on this compendium you put together, Anne, is you go to some of these other communities, and it kind of was amazing me. You know, we have R1, 2, 3, and 4, but I mean, just go down to Ephrata. They added an R5, which is multifamily townhouse. And you go to some of these other ones, and there's like 6 or 7 different, because there's different things that they're wanting to allow in order to encourage the development, and they're actually doing it. And I think those are some things, trying to think of where some of those were, but those are just things that you guys are going to discuss. And then the city council will consider. Yeah, Chris?
Your code might allow for that already. That's another reason why we're changing things a lot. For example, somebody buys a big plot of land and wants to turn it into townhouses.
Go to Kennewick.
They have actually some more opportunity within that because of the code we already have and putting the plan and linking it to him.
Or was it?
To reach that. So there's a lot of flexibility. That's a lot. We just feel like we need to talk about whether we need to give some more in comparison to the citizens.
Right. I mean, the base whole reason behind this is the housing studies. I mean, we knew this, but we didn't realize that the need was that great. 1,200 new units are needed right now to meet the demand. And if we don't begin to do things to meet that demand and encourage that kind of development, it's going to pass us by, and we're going to lose that opportunity. The other thing is, and I'm just going to throw this out, because it has to do with development, that is ADUs. And one of the things that I've had that conversation with Tim, our building official, and with Ann, I think that we can come back here in the next several months and we can come to agreement on ADUs, whereas before we've been pretty split. I had a long conversation with Corey about it today. And under certain conditions, I think it makes sense. I think that we regulate it with zoning and we regulate it with like standard stock plans. But I'm going to save the rest of that conversation for another one. And I'd like to move on in our agenda. Thank you, Ann.
Can I ask a question real quick? Why do you want to stop at 6,000 feet for lot sizes? I know there's lot sizes. I own a 5,500 square foot lot with a 1,300 square foot house on it. So I don't know why it would have to stop to 6. I don't know why it doesn't go down to 5. And that was, you were asking for things.
We were actually looking at that for R4, having exactly what you
said. But I live in an R2.
Right.
You know, so if my house was to burn down, can I even rebuild my house? My lot size is not up to, my lot is too small for that zone. So why wouldn't we drop an R1 and R2 down to 5,000 square feet? I have an amazing size yard with 1,300 square foot yard on 5,000 square foot, or 50, I think it's 50, almost 5,500 square feet.
Go ahead.
But you were asking for suggestions for lot sizes, so this is my.
Again, you know, it's one of those situations where we look, you know, you're looking at planning theory, and what you are trying to get diversity and density. That is part of your plan. You know, you don't want everything to be a cookie cutter. This is the other side of it. And that gives a lot of opportunity to address all those things. So in your case, what you described, Corey, one of the problems you would have maybe ran into, I don't think you would have, but the percentage of lot coverage could have been potentially problematic. At your house. I'm guessing probably right now your percentage of lot coverage isn't. So, but by increasing that, it also, if you burnt it down and rebuilt it, you could build it to a little bit more of what you maybe wanted to add to, is that opportunity. And as Councilman Garza brought up, you know, he talked about some of the problems with that, adding just a garage. But what about adding a gazebo? You wouldn't think that would be a problem. We have seven people in Othello can't add gazebos to their homes because it goes over the lot size percentage. So there's some problems there. But we also want to create some density issues where people can get into affordable housing for starter homes. You know, there's a lot of people. Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And to do that, we also want to leave developers. So when Councilman Garza wants to build his whatever he would like to build, that somebody else could build something smaller, with smaller houses that might fit another niche to help our multiple housing issues. That's why we need a lot of diversity in our zones and a lot of diversity in our planning in the future.
Yeah, we do need that diversity. Just last week, I just kind of give you a little info. Just last week, our 4x8 3/4 sheet went from $70 to $120. So, you know, and with being in trucking so long, I've seen prices hike like that, and they never come down to where they used to be. We're $14 a sheet last year. We're $122 right now. So even if it comes half the price down, we do need to figure out what to do to bring business into town, because the salary here in town is between $220 and $250. Anything after that, we are going to have sales, and I'm not just speaking for me, for other developers that might come in, because I might be here today, maybe not tomorrow. So this will entice other developers to come in, because you can have a smaller lot, put a 1,000-square-foot home, and be able to sell it for under $250,000. And that's what we need in Othello. We do need it. We also need them houses that are $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, because there's a need for them too to, you know, to keep them in town, you know, keep them here in town. Mm-hmm. And we've done that with Palos Verdes. We have a lot of people, once again, that have stuck around and because we provided that home, that need.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. I really, really appreciate you guys considering that.
Okay.
So we're going to have to wait and see what you guys come up with as far as percentage of lot size and what your lot size recommendations are going to be. I did the quick math, and if you were at 6,000 square foot for an R2, it would be 41% to match that 2,450. So, you know, I mean, if you want to build a 2,450 foot home, square foot home, on a 6,000 square foot lot, you'd have to be 41% lot coverage. You'd have to raise the lot coverage for the square footage if you drop it to get the same quality home. And a lot of people are not really big on backyards anymore.
Yeah, you use less water too.
Yeah.
A lot of people are wanting to do covered outdoor area.
Yep. Barbecue areas, covered areas. Yeah, and I love the houses you built on the first phase that you did, because the whole front of the house is pretty much concrete, rolling up into the garages. You know, that's perfect. There's little or no, you know, landscaping that needed to be done on Olympia there with those big homes. I love that. But those are the things you're going to have to consider when you come back, is actual size and then percentage of that size to give the same quality home that he's currently building.
And diversity opportunity. That's another important thing.
Yep. And that's where Brian comes into play, because he knows he should know as a real estate agent what the valuations would be, and those have to be considerations. You know, you need to get him a little bit more involved. Give him some homework, Chris.
I tried last time.
Yeah. Yeah, he needs to be motivated to give you that.
I'll keep on motivating them to be prepared. We certainly get a lot of great information given to us. We just gotta go through them.
Thank you, Ann.
Good. Thank you very much, guys, for presenting that.
Please, we're going to have a lot more debate on this. Are open, so please bring those to us. Because we can only make as good a decision as we have the conversation and try to cover as much as we can.
I'd like to move on to item 4E, which is amending our public works design standard on residential street width.
And I'll recuse myself from item E, amend public work design standards residential street width.
Angel Garza. Okay, thank you, Angel. Let the record show that Angel stepped down from the dais.
Okay.
Sean?
So, Mayor, Council, what we're bringing forward to you is a proposed amendment to our public works design standards. Back in April, we adopted a lot of changes to our public works design standards, but we were still discussing and debating residential street width, whether we want to change it, and what, if we did want to change it, what dimension we wanted to go to. So we went ahead and adopted the updated standards and kept this one item out. We went to discuss it with Planning Commission. They voted to maintain the existing 40-foot standard, while acknowledging we did have a, it created issues with our existing intersections, and which warranted traffic calming measures, which is the traffic circles that we came up with. We took this to the Water Sewer Street Committee after we were, the Planning Commission gave their recommendation. Discussing with them, we came up with a recommendation of 36 feet for the residential streets. Staff just encourages the City Council to factor in the safety benefits of reducing the standard neighborhood street width and the supporting data as they go and make their decision. This doesn't really have any effect on our budget, except this does affect the cost of maintaining residential streets and also the cost of constructing residential streets as new streets get built. Has no effect on the existing streets that are constructed. And so I can answer any questions.
So what is it we're really adopting? Are we adopting the 40-foot standard or the 36?
Recommendation from Planning Commission is 40-foot. Recommendation from the Water Sewer Street Committee is 36-foot. That's for you guys to discuss, make a motion.
So in the motion, we need to make a value.
Correct.
Okay.
Now let's also clarify that we're not talking about the existing streets in the city of Othello. We're only talking about new construction, new
yes.
Subdivisions.
It won't affect the divisions or the phase three that's being constructed right now. That's already with approved plans that have the 40-foot road widths.
Didn't we talk about in the committee at some point, we talked about 36 was okay, but we had talked about possibly putting some wording in there so that we could give the developer kind of the option so that minimum.
Well, our standards are the minimum standards. A developer can always go
wider. So they can always go wider.
Correct, but just like with lot sizes.
We talked about that you know, if the developer came in and wanted 40-foot streets, they could do 40-foot streets, but the minimum they could do was 36.
36 is what was proposed.
Okay.
So just like setting a minimum lot standard, even if you went and said 3,000 square foot lots, they can always go larger than that.
Ready?
I have two simple things. First of all, people in this town do not want 36-foot wide streets. They want 40-foot wide streets. Roger Inns ran a survey. 105 people responded to that survey. One wanted narrow streets. The other 104 wanted streets left at 40 feet. The only other thing I have to say, this was put in all of our folders. I believe Sean.
Yeah.
So as far as the safety benefits go, if you look on here, and he was even kind enough to highlight them for me, I'm sure he did for everybody. 20.
Yeah, we all
20.5% of all accidents in this town between 2014 and 2018 were people hitting parked cars. So now we want to narrow our streets down even narrower. So that's pretty much all I have to say, short and simple.
Yeah, let's just go around the dais, Maria.
I can see the safety of just the different streets, and the one that always comes to mind is by the back of Charity's apartments. Too many kids. I would hate to have that one accident.
John?
I've always said 36, but it's kind of provisional in new developments where there's limited access. It's only going to be the people within that development driving through that development. There's not, you know, in the future, like for arterials or collectors that we build for the city, there should be a definition of a residential street versus a collector or an arterial. So if a developer comes in and says that I'm going to, you know, have this development with 200 new homes, this street is going to be my collector. Or this street is going to, you know, collect traffic and bring it to an arterial. That street should be a little bit wider than the residential street at 36 feet.
Correct. And we have established a collector and arterial street classification map, which sets up a grid. So, I mean, the area on the other side of the canal, as you, between the canal and Highway 17, there will be a requirement for, you know, a collector.
And the map should include future areas, but we can't predict that without plans from a developer. You know,
correct, and we have.
And if you have a developer that looks at a particular area that is limited access, meaning one way in, one way out, and it goes back to a collector or to an arterial, whatever they do inside of that is fine, because it's only the people that live there that are going to be driving there. So I would like, you know, I'd like to say I want to go with 36, and I do, but with conditions that the collectors and the arterials stay larger, at least 40 feet.
We're only talking about residential.
Absolutely, the collectors are, our standard is a minimum of 48 foot, and our arterials are a minimum of, there's a 48 and 58, I believe, are our standard. So we're not, those we did not change.
Okay, so but that's not clarified in the motion.
It lists
this is just residential only.
Yeah, neighborhood.
We call it a neighborhood street. Our public works design standard
so
called it a neighborhood street.
In our public, so the public works design standard has a standard for residential streets, a standard for collectors.
Neighborhood collectors, neighborhood.
Okay.
As long as
that's defined, I'm okay with 36.
Yes.
Gina? Thank you, John.
Sorry it took so long to get that out.
I'm on the Water Sewer Street Committee, and I agreed that I was okay with 36.
36.
The only other option we had was if we left them at 40, they would have to have traffic calming like we talked about earlier tonight on every contact point. But we were good with 36.
Thank you. Gina?
Mark? So like Eugene was saying, on 4th Street, people use that going really fast, except they do have to slow down between Fur and Hamlet, because that street narrows down 3 feet right there.
It's 37 feet. That's why I just asked Chris. It's 37 feet there.
Yeah.
By the time you get a car parked on each side, and you got a car coming this way and a car coming this way, you playing chicken.
You can fit, but it.
So you're playing chicken at 37 feet, but we're going to narrow our street down to 36 feet.
That's my point.
So we're going to be even playing closer chicken.
Right.
And we're going to take our 20% accident rate and go to what?
But where are we designating 4th Street, 4th Avenue? To me, it's a collector. Because it runs north and south. And the only way out of that northern area is to come down 4th. Unless you run over to 7th. And a lot of people aren't going to do that because it's on residential streets.
So I'm for the 36 feet, keep the traffic. My block's only from 4th to 7th and then 7th to, or 4th to Desdemona and then Desdemona to 7th. And it's amazing how fast people can go in that short of a distance.
It is. Damn, don't do that. Where's the stuff that I was supposed to have been given?
Okay. So, well, if you're gonna change the design standard on the neighborhood streets, I need a motion. If you want to leave it as is, then no motion.
I'd make a motion to amend the minimum standard width of neighborhood streets to 36 feet.
Second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So for the record, the council members, Mark Snyder, Gina Doro, John Lawless, and Maria Quesada voted in favor of the motion, and Corey Everett voted against the motion. Okay, thank you.
And Angel Garza abstained.
Angel Garza was recused. Next, I'd like to move to item 4F, executive session litigation. So, excuse me. I'll also mention that Angel Garza is rejoining the council at the dais at 8:12 p.m. Council will now adjourn at 8:12 p.m. to go into an executive session pursuant to RCW 42.30.1101I to discuss with legal counsel representing the agency matters relating to agency enforcement actions, or to discuss with legal counsel representing the agency limitation or potential litigation to which the agency, the governing body, or a member acting in an official capacity is or is likely to become a party when non-public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in adverse legal or financial consequence to the agency. This executive session is expected to last 15 minutes and no action will be taken during the executive session. So with 2 p.m. And I'd like to move to item 5, which is our unfinished business. Do we have unfinished business tonight? I have one item. I had mentioned at our last city council meeting that we're going to have the ARPA discussion. We still, as staff, haven't put together a list of recommendations yet, but we're having that meeting on Wednesday, so we'll... reasonably certain we'll be ready to have that discussion on the 26th. So we'll bring that back to the council. ARPA, remember, is the American Recovery Preservation Act, which this deposited in the city's account $1.17 million. So we're still in the process of absorbing what exactly we can spend that on and creating some priorities from from staff perspectives. And then we'll bring those for the council to make some decisions on what we want to prioritize and how we go about doing that. Having any other unfinished business tonight? Okay, then I'll go to new business, which is item 6.
Are we planning anytime soon to stripe the parking lot right there at the pool, north lot by the tower?
I don't know, but I can check
there.
It's been worn off for a while. It used to be striped.
There's a few light ones there.
It's always nice to have things delineated for people.
Okay.
Any other new business? Item 7 is the council will also receive the building and planning report. And having no further business to come before city council, I'd like to adjourn tonight's meeting at 8:34 p.m.